Sometimes I get tired of my own laments and wonder why I can't seem to turn my attention from the collapse of our civilization taking place in our own time at breakneck speed. But then I remember there's no choice. What's more important, the passing of Michael Jackson? Not to me. To think everything's going to turn out okay because our political leaders have figured out or will figure out how to avoid catastrophe is to think in a childlike manner. The catastrophe is already here. As Pink Floyd so memorably put it, there is no dark side of the moon. It's all dark. The people in Washington, which is now not only the political capital of the world, but also the place where all the important economic decisions are made, are acting in ways seemingly guaranteed to speed up our scurrying toward the proverbial cliff from which we'll plunge lemming-like to our end. Talking to people, as I do for a living, I find that many of them have concluded that nothing can be done at this stage to stave off the inevitable. We've amassed debt that cannot be repaid, and to which we are adding additional trillions of dollars, while continuing the pretense that the American empire can somehow control the entire world, when clearly it cannot. We have armies in Eurasia assigned the impossible task of pacifying what has never been pacified. We move out of Iraq's cities, but have no intention of ever totally leaving that place. Forget the words about withdrawal. The fact is we've invested billions of dollars in building the world's largest embassy in Baghdad and constructing fortified bases around Iraq that are like little American towns, replete with fast food restaurants, expensive gyms, and all the comforts of home. The new president is expanding our forces on the ground in Afghanistan, making that war his war. It's hard to see a happy ending to that occupation since it's taking place in a part of the world home to tens of millions of tribal people who have always prevailed over invaders. Are we more likely to succeed at this than Alexander the Great, the British Imperial Army, or the Soviet Union? Admittedly, we can't be sure of anything in the future, but chances are we'll be out of there relatively soon without having constructed some lasting democratic women as equals America-friendly society, which is the stated goal of our current crop of imperialists. It's clear we will continue down this path as long as we can. We've constructed a massive military machine, which churns on and on, immune to serious trimming because of the very thing President Eisenhower warned against in his farewell address nearly a half century ago. The influence of what he called the military-industrial complex. My understanding is that Ike originally wanted to identify it more completely as the military-industrial-congressional complex, but changed the designation in his final draft of the speech. The axiom has it that to a man with a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Our massive military is America's hammer. It's a tool that must have uses found for it, and so we continue to wage perpetual war for perpetual peace. Meantime, the wizards in Washington are committed to other incredibly expensive actions that they insist will make things better for us. One of them is the Waxman-Markey bill, a purposeful rising of the cost of usable energy in the name of combating what used to be known as global warming, but is now called climate change because there hasn't been any global warming for a decade or so, and would represent, critics say, the largest tax increase in the history of the Republic. Take a moment to read why the issue is faked and why this fakery is being promoted. It seems insane to think our lawmakers would pass something like this, yet it's the kind of thing they do, isn't it?